Are you ready, Alabama?
Oh, the band is out on the field!
The band is leaving the field.
And one time, at band camp,
love the drum.
Man, I do love my drum.
If you say that's what she said one more time, I'm gonna pop you.
You're welcome to join the doghouse.
Oh, God. I'm so sorry. I keep doing that.
Call the big dog now at 866-485-9867.
Be a dog.
The clock starts on my whistle.
How you doing?
It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Here he is, the head of the household. Here's drum major Big Dog. It's Tom Abraham.
We strong.
You all may be taking the week off, right, this week, but I'm not.
The band has cleared the field. It's time for the second half of the Tom Abraham Show. Football Friday in the doghouse. All football music. We have our future facta as well. We did the SEC and the ACC in the last few weeks. Gave you 2 weeks on the SEC. I'm going to repost all of the picks, but you know it's much easier if you get in as they go, because that's it. I'm going to cut them off. And, yeah, of course, you're playing for Music City Bowl tickets as well. And today it's the Big Ten in the spotlight. And I'm using the Vegas numbers, so if you want to jump in on it, you can go ahead and hit the text window or use the phone when we get the phone lines open up again. Ohio State, 10.5, Wisconsin, 10.5, Penn State, 9.5, and Michigan at 8.5. And we talked a little bit about the schedule as well. But who better to talk to than Steve Merrill from ProSportsInfo.com. Steve now has been a regular for a few years on the show, helping us with handicapping, and he joins us on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Steve, welcome back. How are you?
Hey, Tom. Great to be back.
There's high-level negotiations going on. Steve, I don't know if you checked your email recently, but there's high-level negotiations going on between Steve's people and our people to see whether or not Steve will be a regular again this year. So I can't say yet because I haven't heard back on that officially yet. But hopefully Steve will be joining us all week. So get with your people and my people and see if we can't make this happen, Steve.
I'll tell my people we will make it happen.
Okay.
We'll nail down the time and a day, but we'll make it happen.
Yeah, there we go. We just kind of nailed down the time and the day, and we could get it going. All right, before we get into these numbers here, you're my go-to guy, too, when it comes down to the legality of what's going on with legalized sports gambling, and we spent a lot of time talking about the daily fantasy, and that ship has sailed. There's no question about it. I know there's been some stuff going on in New Jersey as well about legalized sports gambling. Is there anything new on the horizon that you're hearing as we approach another football season?
Well, a couple of weeks ago, one thing that did pop was the FanDuel-DraftKings merger did not go through. They were catching a lot of heat. I guess they felt like they were going to be too big of a company. I'm not sure why it matters. Who cares if we have only one, fantasy sports league? I think that's actually a good thing because you can kind of pool everything together. So they're going to be separate entities. They're the two big names in fantasy sports, but everything's still moving forward. More states are allowing it, regulating it, just like we thought they would. New Jersey's thing is interesting. The Supreme Court looks like they still might hear at the U.S. Supreme Court, and I think that's coming up soon. Whether they rule in favor or not, I think New Jersey's kind of got a nuclear option where they're going to rewrite their law, which allows them to sneak back into that federal ban from the early 90s. So I think one way or the other, we could very well see, if not this Super Bowl, next football season, we will have sports betting in New Jersey. And that'll kind of open the floodgates, I think, for another 10 states or so. People I've talked to said there's at least 10 to 15 states that basically have things, all their ducks in a row right now, and they're ready to go once they get the green light.
Yeah, and it was, I talked earlier about the book Dueling with Kings, Daniel Barbarisi from the Wall Street Journal that he wrote, and it was a fascinating book. And, it's your chapter and a half, two chapters in, by the time you realize that everybody involved in the daily fantasy accepts it as sports gambling, period.
Right.
End of story. And the funny part is that one of the best indicators that it is sports gambling was the fact that they were going around and around with Gamblers Anonymous because they wanted to have that option available for people who, you know, have trouble and don't understand how to control themselves. And we've always talked about if there were legalized sports gambling, you'd have to make a deposit ahead of time. You would only be betting what you could. There wouldn't be these margin calls, and you wouldn't get yourself in trouble like people do when they're in the stock market and things like that. And the funny thing is that they were gonna do this alliance, and then they decided not to do the alliance with them because if they did, then they would be admitting that it was sports gambling. So they're like, no, we don't need any help from Gamblers Anonymous because we're not gambling. And it's almost comical the way they kind of ran around trying to, you know, be not what they are.
Yeah, what's interesting about the fantasy sports, the daily fantasy sports, you know, we've had fantasy sports around for a decade or two decades, mm-hmm. especially the baseball, you know, rotisserie leagues from the 1990s and 2000s. But, you know, within the last 5 years, this daily fantasy option where you basically, within 3 hours, can play a lineup and either win or lose, you don't have to wait all season, has really changed the game. The leagues are behind it, so it's very hard now for the leagues not to be, the sports leagues not to be behind, you know, point spread betting, which is on a 1 hour, you know, a 3 hour game as well. And the other thing that's interesting about the daily fantasy sports, we've talked about this before, Tom, is that the odds are terrible. I mean, in football, yeah. You know, most sports books, it's -110 either way. You lay 11 to win 10 on what theoretically is a 50-50 proposition. So there's a little bit of a house edge. The daily fantasy, like the head-to-heads and the double-ups, it's basically like a 50-cent line, -125 each way. So it'd be like laying 12.5 to win 10. So there's a huge house edge. And my fear with the legalized sports betting with the states is that they're going to kind of take a lottery approach. And if that's the case, it's going to be a huge house edge, and they're going to factor in taxes as well. And it's going to all be for naught because people are going to still play off in Costa Rica at the internet sports books and with local bookies on credit because, you know, they're going to have so much fees and a house edge built in that people aren't going to take the state-run game seriously. And that's exactly what we've seen in Canada for years now with that pro-line lottery. It's a huge house edge. You have to pick three-team parlays, and it's really not sports betting.
No, it has to be like Europe. You know, it has to be like England, right? I mean, England's a pretty, I mean, the VIG is reasonable. It's a, you know, it's a pretty much straight up deal. It's like going to Vegas. I mean, that's the biggest part about it that's so whacked. I mean, here we are. We're a nation. We're United States. And the cat who lives in Vegas has got no problem at all. And the guy that lives in California in the neighboring state, you know, can't make a legal bet.
And just to let, you know, the listeners catch them up to date, the reason this is all a problem, New Jersey's voters have legalized it. You know, they've come out a couple years ago, and they say, we want sports betting. And there's a federal law from 1992, PASPA, the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act, that was passed over 25 years ago that prohibits any state from legalizing it. And the four, of course, that were grandfathered in was, of course, Nevada, because they already had it in Las Vegas. Delaware, Montana, and Oregon had provisions for the lottery, so they actually could have it pretty easily. But New Jersey, even with Atlantic City, can't do it. And so it's really silly. How can you say it's okay for four states and it's not okay for the other 46 federally?
Nuts.
And the other thing, too, I'll point out real quick, it's a little bit of a tangent, but you know, the legalization of marijuana is something I follow closely for the same reason. Federally, it's still not legal, but states like Colorado, California, a lot of other states now have legalized it within the state, and the feds aren't doing anything to stop it. It's not a matter of if, it's just a matter of when now that sports betting will be allowed in a lot of these states.
Steve Merrill with us, Pro Sports Info. Of course, Steve, also help you out with NASCAR, baseball, as we're going down the stretch here, and then in season with the basketball, the NBA, and the NCAA as well at prosportsinfo.com. All right, Steve, Big Ten. We're talking Big Ten today in terms of our over-under numbers, and let's start with Ohio State. And, you know, obviously you look to the schedule and that Oklahoma game sits there looming on September 9th. The back number for Ohio State is 10.5 on their win total, which means they would only be able to lose one game or it goes to an under. You know, problematic maybe at Nebraska. Penn State comes in, but that's a revenge game for them. And they're at the Big House at the end of the year. It feels like a three-game schedule for Ohio State, Oklahoma, Nebraska, Penn State, and Michigan, a four-game, you know, kind of about a four-game deal unless they get tripped up at Iowa or something like that. What do you think about Ohio State at 10.5 in the regular season?
Yeah, they have, of course, 12 regular season games. So, yeah, 10-2 you lose, 11-1 or better, you're going to win that play. Yeah, boy, there's not a lot of value going over 10.5, but I still think that's probably the way to play it. Just because of the schedule, as you mentioned, Michigan's going to be down a notch this year. You know, Michigan outplayed them at Ohio State last year, you know, so you would figure on the road at Michigan they'd have a tough time with it. But Michigan's going to be really young this year. Ohio State returns 15 starters. Michigan only has four back on offense and only one defensive starter back. So Ohio State could very well be favored in that game at the end of the season. I think the only dark, or the other team that could get them is Penn State. In fact, Ohio State's one of the top three favorites to win the national title, but I think Penn State might win this division even. They've also got 15 starters back. They, of course, beat Ohio State last year. Now, the game is at Ohio State this year, and it's a huge revenge game. So, you know, the two tough games on the schedule both set up pretty well for Ohio State, and I think they probably get 11 wins.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about Michigan then. They're at 8.5, which I did think was a touch low, even though, you know, they are young, like you say. But a lot of it maybe comes off of this first game. I mean, they're what, a 3.5-point favorite? I'm looking at the numbers right now. About a 3.5-point favorite over Florida in Jerry's world. And I, you know, man, Jim McElwain, he's freaky. You know, I don't know who the quarterback's going to be. I guess it's going to be Malik Zaire. I didn't see that coming. I didn't understand it. But, you know, I don't think Michigan is going to go down to Dallas and just, you know, rack up 38 points against a Florida defense, even though they're making a lot of changes there. That might be the swing game, though, for them. They drop that game. It's going to be awfully hard for them to go over 8.5. But what do you think about Michigan at 8.5?
I think that's definitely the swing game, because if you really look at their schedule, we know they're a favorite, as you said, against Florida now on a neutral field on September 2nd. You know, as I look at the schedule, they'll probably only be an underdog in maybe three games all season. So that would mean they go 9-3. So I think just by default, you lean towards the over. And, you know, yes, they only return one defensive starter, as I mentioned, but the question becomes, has Harbaugh already gotten them to that point in his third year where they don't rebuild, they reload? You know, teams like Alabama return four defensive starters all the time. They're still great. I just don't know if Michigan's at that point yet in just Harbaugh's third year, but they had a lot of talent even before he got there. So I think, if anything, they might be a little underrated this season. They are at Penn State. They'll be a dog. There maybe will be a dog at home against Ohio State. That's the season finale. They're at Wisconsin. They'll be a dog. So those are the three games, I think. One tough game, though, is October 14th at Indiana. Indiana could be a bit of a sleeper this year in the Big Ten, and I don't think they'll be an underdog in that game, but that would not shock me to see the Hoosiers win that as they return 15 starters.
The Penn State one is fascinating. I mean, that's a game where I'm usually very focused on the SEC, and I quickly check my SEC schedule to see if, that's Alabama, Tennessee. So I'll be in Tuscaloosa for that one. But that game against Penn State at Penn State is fascinating because, you know, we talked about the revenge factor for Ohio State and Penn State when that game is going to be at Ohio State. Same thing. Penn State got trucked when they were at Michigan last year. So you wonder whether or not Penn State has something for Michigan when they get there. That's going to be a fascinating one.
Yeah, not only that, but Penn State has the bye week before the Michigan game. So they have a week to get ready for a huge revenge spot. I think that really sets up well, actually, for Ohio State for that reason. So even though I kind of my dark horse pick, I'm taking Penn State to win this division, I think they're definitely up against it, because they're going to be coming off the Michigan game and having to play on the road at Ohio State to try to get that win against a Buckeye team with revenge. So it looks like things set up pretty good for the Ohio State Buckeyes in this division. That's also why they're one of the two or three favorites to win the national title.
Penn State is at 9.5. Which means you're only afforded two losses if you like them over. And everybody so far has been picking them over. But they do have that stretch. They got Michigan at home, at Ohio State, at Michigan State. And I know Michigan State was down last year, but still that's a tough three-game stretch there. Everything else looks, you know, doable. Although at Iowa, you never know what's going to happen with Iowa. This Iowa team, you know, they just up and bite somebody every once in a while. So I don't know if this is going to be one of those years for them. But, you know, it's a tricky number. Again, they know where to put the number, 9.5. You got that three-game stretch right there in late October going into November 4th.
Yeah, I mean, the one edge, they do have that bye week before the Michigan-Ohio State games, as I mentioned, but they're coming off games against Indiana, who I just said a while ago is a dark horse, and then they're at Northwestern before that bye week. Northwestern's going to be very competitive this year as well. And as you mentioned, Tom, they start off with Iowa before the Indiana-Northwestern game. So they have a stretch of really six straight Big Ten games there in the middle of the season, which are all going to be tough. And one thing I say about college football, it's the NFL, it's true too, but especially college football, it's hard to bring your A game each and every week. And situational handicapping is something I use exclusively very, very much in college football. And, you know, just looking at the schedule now, you could definitely see them losing maybe two of those six games. So they're really not going to be able to falter anywhere else on the schedule. Good news, though, is they really don't have many more challenges at the beginning or the end of the schedule. It's a very weak non-conference schedule, and other than maybe Pittsburgh. And then at the end, they get Nebraska and Maryland will both be down enough this year.
Steve Merrill with this Pro Sports Info, looking at some Big Ten over and unders. And then there's Wisconsin. I when I pulled these numbers this morning, I was surprised to see Wisconsin at 10.5. I mean, that's pretty salty stuff. But then again, I look at their schedule, but I just wonder, how good is BYU? I mean, I need to know how good is BYU, because if they're going to go to BYU and not get dumped there, they're at Nebraska, right in the middle of the schedule. You know, I don't think at Indiana and Illinois is too much of a problem. They get Iowa and Michigan at home, so that's that other game. We're going to talk about Minnesota in a moment, but they only can lose one game if you like them, you know, over 10.5. How good is BYU?
Yeah, I think that's the question, and it's at BYU. You know, so you got the thin air and altitude as always, and that can always cause a bit of a trip, a trip up for teams that aren't used to playing there. The good news for them, though, is they do get the bye week after that game to recover, and then they have a strong Northwestern team coming to home after that. So they have a very favorable conference schedule. They get Northwestern at home off the bye. Their only road games are Nebraska, Illinois, Indiana, and Minnesota. And really, Indiana's the toughest one of those four. They avoid Ohio State. They avoid Penn State. And they avoid they get Michigan at home. So it's a very cupcake conference schedule, and I think that's one of the reasons that win total's so high.
Yeah. All right. I love P.J. Fleck. I mean, I love P.J. Fleck. They're going to bite somebody this year. I don't know what they got. I don't know how good they are. They'll go out to Oregon State. They get Middle Tennessee at home. They get Buffalo at home. They'll have Maryland at home. They'll go to Purdue. I mean, they're liable to be like 5-0, making all kinds of noise. Everybody be, you know, rowing the boat and all that stuff. Get Michigan State at home, and then who knows what they do. Now, down the stretch, it gets tough. But, you know, I get the feeling that the team that may upset the apple cart in some of these over-unders, it will be Minnesota. I mean, do you think that I know it'll take a couple of years for him to get everything exactly the way he wants it, but do you see a possibility of them starting to dump a few people as soon as this upcoming season?
Well, P.J. Fleck, of course, coming over from Western Michigan, did a great job last year, and then the last 3 years, 29-11 mark. However, his first year, though, back in 2013, they went 1-11. So now, granted, Minnesota probably has a little more talent on hand than he had in Western Michigan when he took over a floundering program. But still, you know, even there it took him a year to get going, and then he was dominant. So it's just tough to know right now. They do return 7 offensive starters, 5 on defense. This is a team that as the season progresses, I think they probably get better. And you look at the later part of the schedule, they've got a road game at Iowa and Michigan. They've got a road game at Northwestern. You know, it's going to be tough to win any of those. They maybe can stay within inflated numbers. Nebraska at home is winnable, and then they close with Wisconsin at home. So even if they play well this year, they've got a very tough schedule regardless.
I want you to know you will be proud of me. You would be proud of me. I already released my first lock of the year earlier this week. I released it. This is what it sounded like on, I think, Tuesday. It's the lock of the year, the Hall of Fame game. It's my 5-bone lock of the year, the Hall of Fame game. The Cowboys win. There you go. I laid 1.5, as I told the listeners that you don't lose when
Jerry. It landed on the closing numbers.
No, I said at 1.5. At the time, it was 1.5.
Yeah, when you put that out on Tuesday, it might even have been Pick'em still. In fact, Dallas last week was +1. And then it went to Pick'em, and then it was announced that the Cardinals were not going to play any of their starters, so it goes to -1 on Wednesday. And then yesterday it went to 1.5, and it was basically 2 all afternoon and evening. So 80% of the people that played that game got a push either way last night. And amazing, isn't it? You know, we talk about you can't handicap the preseason, yet the odds makers got it 100% exactly right already.
I didn't care about starters or anything else. My handicapping knowledge on that was you don't lose for Jerry Jones. I mean, gosh, they're putting the owner's going into the hot, but they looked terrible early. I mean, they were down 15-0 before you could say, hey, it's a Hall of Fame game. But I just figured there was no way the Cowboys would lose for the owner. You know what I mean? But so I'm 1-0, and I do a lock of the year about every 2 weeks. So I'm 1-0.
You double up on your shoeing of the year.
That's what, just keep double down wherever you are. Double down on the lock of the year.
The lock doesn't win. You double up on the shoeing.
There you kind of shoeing. That's right. All right. Before I let you go, Alabama opened at 5.5. They're at 7. Some people got them to 7.5. If you like Alabama, and obviously where we're at, a lot of people like Alabama. Is it? Does it make sense to try and get this early? Do you think that you know the Alabama hysteria pushes this number higher, or do you think that you might could wait and actually get this back down under that magic number of 7?
Yeah, I mean, you lose a lot of line value when it crosses 6 and 7. You're talking about a 4% chance they win by 6, about a 5% chance they win by 7. So from 5.5 to 7.5, you've almost lowered your win expected win percentage by about 9% long term. So it's a pretty substantial move. I understand the move, though. You know, you look how good they've been on opening games against these non-conference teams. Of course, USC was pretty bad against everyone for the first month last year. But they beat up on Wisconsin the year before that. West Virginia gave them a run 3 years ago. And I think a lot of the reason people are jumping on them is because they lost that national title game, and they feel like they're going to come out of the gate, you know, in a PO'd mood. The question, though, is how good is Florida State? I think Florida State's pretty good. I think Alabama's very good as well, but I'm not so sure Florida State deserves to be more than a touchdown dog now, you know, without seeing anything on the field yet.
Always a pleasure, Steve Merrill. He'll be with us all year long. We don't know when, where, what time, but at some point he'll be in there. Steve, I appreciate you, man.
Thanks, Tom.
All right, thank you. Steve Merrill. If you don't hit the lock of the year, double down on the shoe-in. That's a great line. This is the shoe-in of the year. All right, let's get a break. When we come back, Cecil Hurt will join us from the Tuscaloosa News. We'll get an update on Alabama next right here on 730-1039.
Now back to the big dog. This show is rough.
I want to talk Tide in Tuscaloosa. Who better than Cecil Hurt? Who's been doing it longer than Cecil Hurt? I'm just saying, is there anybody bumping around in that room longer than Cecil Hurt? A lot of good guys covering it. There's no question about it. A lot of guys. Aaron Suttles comes on the show all the time as well, and from TideSports.com and the Tuscaloosa News. But, you know, Cecil Hurt joins us now on the Woody Anderson Ford VIP hotline. Cecil, welcome in. How are you, man?
Great. How are you guys today?
Well, fantastic. How many guys in that room when you're doing that post-practice press conference with Nick and all that stuff, how many guys in that room have been covering this team longer than you?
Not many. Kirk McNair has been doing it a long time. Kirk worked for the university for going back to Coach Bryant. So he's really the only one that are there on a regular basis that go back that far.
Yeah. Did you see that story? I'd love to get your thought on it. That story out of Texas with Tom Herman and the Texas SID having to put out the notice that not to stand behind coach, you know, when they're having that, they have the scrum on the field, which Nick does it at the podium. Yeah, don't stand behind the coach and don't tweet anything during the press conference. Wait until afterwards so that you can reread your tweets and thoughts and then send them out. Yeah, that ship has sailed, I think, man, isn't it?
Yeah, that's going to be a hard thing to enforce. I mean, there's something to be said for. I mean, if you're concentrating on what's being said, you're probably not tweeting. But one thing, in our case, in Al.com's case, and I'm sure in the Austin American Statesman's case, there's more than one guy there. You know, you can multitask. You'll have a beat reporter, and then you may have a columnist there. You may have another reporter, and he or she can handle the tweeting while the beat reporter does the questioning and deals with the coach. So, it's not the hardest thing in the world to do.
Well, these young guys can really multitask. I don't even know. My kids, they do their homework. They got earbuds in. They're listening to music, and they're talking to their friends at the same time. I'm like, well, I couldn't possibly do that. But, so those guys, you know, who knows what they could do in terms of putting that stuff out. The funny one to me was don't stand behind the coach, because I'm sitting here thinking, you know what? Who said you got to have the scrum on the field? I mean, you know, go up against the wall and have the backdrop behind you, or go inside, get out of the heat, and get at a podium and do it the way Nick does it.
Yeah, get Lone Star or Shiner or one of the beer companies to buy you a screen and stand in front of the screen. Get some advertising.
They just spent $10,000 a locker on their locker room over there. I mean, I don't know. Maybe they're not going to get into the Alamo Bowl or something now that they got a locker room like that. I don't know.
Well, it's a ultimately, it's not an important thing. And ultimately, it's not going to determine Tom Herman's future at Texas. That's what
no.
he needs. You need to concentrate on things that are going to help you win ball games.
Yeah. Yeah, there's no question about it. All right, so the national narrative will be on the Deshaun Hand deal. Well, there's Nick Saban again. You know, he's soft on discipline and so on. And look, I fall in line with the, you know, there should be certain things that require automatic game time suspensions. But I also believe in shades of gray. And this one here has got a lot of shades of gray between the kid himself and his record in the past being such a good kid. And the fact that this is not going to go down as a DUI, I didn't really have a problem with it. What were your thoughts on it and how Saban ends up handling this?
I think every case is different. I think that the best coaches handle things on an individual basis. When I hear people say, if you suspend it for a game, that's good, and if you don't, that's bad. That's just a, leeway in that. There's no thought put into it. It's just mandatory sentencing, which doesn't always work. Now, you don't want kids running wild in your program, but you'll ultimately pay your own penalty if you let that happen.
Right.
So, players have backgrounds, and some players are good students and conscientious off the field, and some players aren't. But the coach has to know that, and we're so concerned with punishment, not improvement, and we're so concerned with the only punishment, the only thing in the range of 1,000 different things you could have him do is miss a football game. That I understand people, and as I've said on every show that's called, DUI is serious business. You endanger yourself, and you endanger people who didn't make the same dumb choice that you made. It's better that Deshaun didn't get out on the road, but you don't need to be in that position. The police did the right thing. But that doesn't automatically translate, well, all right, we'll hold him out of this first game, and that'll teach him. I don't know if it would or wouldn't, but you look at whether that's the best option, and you go with it. And fortunately for Nick, he's been in the business long enough, he knows there's going to be criticism. And he's going to do what he thinks is best anyway.
Yeah. And then, of course, Florida State, first opponent for the Tide in that big game coming up in Atlanta on the second. Wide receiver Devontae Phillips has been suspended indefinitely. But dude is facing 5 felony charges for cashing and depositing items with intent to defraud and grand theft. I mean, my gosh, that's kind of a big deal.
And I would say the same thing about Jimbo that I would say about Nick Saban. I trust him to do the right thing. And you look at that situation, and first of all, the guy who gets involved in that kind of charge and that amount of charges, but also just that kind of behavior, he's probably had some problems before. He's probably not your best citizen. Maybe he is, and he just had a really bad day. But again, his legal situation is different than what Deshaun's legal situation is.
Yeah, well, I mean, there were 14 different transactions on that deal. He was taking checks and money orders and changing the amounts on them and defrauding the banks, getting a money order, taking it to a Publix and changing the amount on there. And there's 14 different instances of it happening. So, I mean, this is a guy on his way to being a career criminal.
Well, hopefully not. Hopefully whatever discipline Jimbo Fisher decides on, I have great respect for Jimbo. And whatever he decides on will help him, too. That's the important thing.
Yeah.
Tell him whether he plays against Alabama or not.
Yeah, that would be the key to what happens there. All right. Obviously, we have very little access during, practice. Do you guys get the viewing period and things like that? But there are a few position battles that are taking place that are significant. What are the things you're most interested in seeing, what happens between now and the second in terms of spots that are question marks for you?
Well, once they get into pads, which they're not yet, I'm interested to see the defensive front, how they replace Jonathan Allen, Ryan Anderson, you know, so much talent in the front seven with inexperienced guys for the most part. And then how they revamped the right side of the offensive line with Jonah Williams moving over to the left side. Will it be Cotton or Pershbacher at right guard? Will it be Lashley, Womack, Leatherwood? Who will be the right tackle? So I'm interested in seeing those things. Every position has something, and every position has something intriguing, and every position has freshmen coming in who could impact. You're not allowed to say depth chart, but play in rotation. And so there's something at every position. That's why it's good to have some practice time. But I think defensive front and right side of the offensive line are what most people are looking at.
Yeah, well, it's going to be interesting the way they juggle the defensive backfield as well. I mean, they've got parts there that can play in different positions, including, you know, Minkah Fitzpatrick, who seems to be the, kind of the key to all of that. But it's going to be interesting to see how they line those guys up. On the Jalen Hurts front, there's all this talk about, you know, becoming a better passer, more accurate. We saw they struggled with accuracy and with passing yards in the playoff and in the championship game. But, you know, I don't want to say that, you know, this isn't a big time for him to have improvement. But when you look at the way this team seems to be built, it seems to be so much talent in the backfield that, you know, I don't think they're going to throw the ball 50 times a game, right? I mean, he needs to be accurate in those 19 to 22 times they throw it, but I don't think they're going to be throwing it as nearly as much as we saw with Lane Kiffin, and especially with the number of quality backs they have, right? I mean, we're going to see a little bit of a big boy football again out of Alabama here?
I would think they'd like to do that. That's the surest way to win, and I think that's the way that Nick Saban's the most comfortable with running the offense. But you have to be able to do both, and the rules of football as they are today dictate that you do have to throw some. You can't just line up there with two tights and a fullback and slam it straight ahead on every down. You won't score enough to win. You know, the rules enable the other team to be able to score, but you do want to be in a position in the third and fourth quarter if you have a lead, put a game away in that way. They have a group of players who can do it. They did it without a group. They did it with just Derrick Henry 2 years ago. You know, you just handed it to Derrick as if he were three guys. And so they would like to do that again. They have the luxury of having a lot of skilled guys back there to run the ball. Again, they're trying to rebuild a right side of an offensive line. You can't do it without a good offensive line. Jalen's skill set enhances that because you have to worry about him just keeping that thing or, as you say, throwing it occasionally. So they'd love to do it, but the time's coming where the rules just make you have to score enough points that you have to throw the ball some.
Right. Well, you have to throw the ball some, and the kid is shown to be a playmaker at the time when you have to make plays. But to me, it's been fascinating to watch the narrative about him because of the fact that he's a guy that was the SEC Offensive Player of the Year, not the Freshman of the Year, he was the Player of the Year in the SEC, and yet it seems to be so much of the conversation in the offseason has been about what he can't do and what he needs to do and whether or not he's going to lose his job to Tua. And then there's been a lot of talk about where other where he ranks nationally. He's not the best quarterback in the country. I don't think it's a bad thing for him to be ranked 6, 7, 8, 10 best quarterback in the entire country. There's a lot of really good pure quarterbacks in the country, but it seems weird that he has been. It seems like that they almost go out of their way to kind of backhand him a little bit.
Well, first, you get into a situation of how are you evaluating the 10 best quarterbacks in the country? Are you talking about if the NFL draft were tomorrow, who would be the 10 guys picked? Or would Sam Darnold would be first, and maybe Baker Mayfield would be second, and so forth, because they have a particular skill set that's suited to the NFL. Jalen has a little bit different skill set. You can still be the best quarterback if you're Lamar Jackson or Jalen Hurts. You may not be a first-round draft choice. So I don't think that Jalen's the best. I think he's young. I think he's got some development to do. But, you know, to compare him, to put him up against pro-style guys, well, he's not he's not Sam Darnold. Well, no, he's not. But Sam Darnold isn't Jalen Hurts either.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's or Josh Rosen or other guys like that. And he may be the perfect quarterback for what they're trying to do. And Nick Saban has always been really big on intangibles, and it seems to be that's – look, I thought when that kid had to strip, you know, first of all, he fumbles against USC in his first play ever. I'm thinking, well, he's got to be shot. And then he has that strip sack fumble against Ole Miss. I thought, we're never going to see this kid again. And he just very coolly leads the team back from down three touchdowns, you know, to help win a football game. And so he's even against Clemson, as bad as it was in that national championship game, you know, as bad as we think it was, he makes an unbelievable 31-yard run to, or whatever yard, 35-yard run with 2 minutes to go in the game to give his team the lead. He wasn't out there playing defense, you know, the next 2 minutes. So it's kind of weird. And they said, well, he'll be the quarterback for 3 years. And then the next guy, I'm not sure that he isn't a guy. I'm not sure automatically that he's a guy that goes in the NFL draft after 3 years, because I don't know that he's going to be an NFL quarterback even. Really, you don't know.
Yeah, I would say the same thing about Lamar Jackson. I don't know that he's going. He won the Heisman last year, came back, and I don't know that he'll go to the NFL after this season. You know, he's just a different type player. Now, he might. You know, it's possible, but you know, some guys are fit that NFL image, and some guys have a different skill set. And again, it doesn't mean that they're not great quarterbacks. You know, that's why Deshaun Watson was back at Clemson. You know, that's what you look for. He's not back this year, you know, because he was going to be a first-round draft choice. But nobody thought that coming out of high school, because he has a different kind of skill set.
Yeah, there's no question. All right, man, how do you read it? I mean, during this time, over these next 4 weeks, it's obviously you're a veteran of doing this. Is there little tells or little things that you look for in the limited amount of time that you see and hearing these press conferences and stuff, or is it just something where you just got to sit on it until they roll out of that tunnel on September 2nd and then we actually know what's going on?
I think there are things you can get into pads. I don't think there's much you can tell. Mm-hmm. In shorts, other than what you already know, which is that they're big and athletic and fast and have good players. When they get into competition, when they get into scrimmaging, when they get over to the stadium, you know, what little we can see and what we can hear and pick up, that's when you can start to tell who's mm-hmm. making a move, which freshman is really going to play. That's probably about 2 weeks away. So that's what I always look.
All right, man. Appreciate you as always. Cecil Hurd has been our guest. Cecil, thanks, man.
Oh, always glad to do it, Tom. Good to talk
all right.
to you.
Thank you. Cecil's always solid. But we know that there's this craving for information, but it's very difficult to get very much information because it's just the way they run it. And whether it's, and that's everywhere. No, I take that back. That's not everywhere. There are places where guys are going to practice and they see practice and, you know, different places allow different things. It's just not at Alabama and even less at Auburn and not at LSU and, you know, those types of places. There are some places, you know, T-Mac, I wonder if James Franklin is allowing the media there and Penn State and Happy Valley to go to practice and hang out there, do you think? Because that's how he was in Nashville.
I don't know what would be much different. I mean, from Nashville to, obviously.
Wow, it's Penn State
yeah,
now.
It's Penn State. It's bigger, but.
Don't have to sell the program. I mean, in when he was at Vanderbilt, I mean, he was, you know, he loved having. I used to go do my show from the patio overlooking the field during practice. You think I'm kidding you?
No.
I'm standing here on the Tom Abraham patio of the Vanderbilt football facility where you broadcasted your show. I mean, you think I was kidding. This is actually, we renamed it the Tom Abraham patio at the Vanderbilt football practice facility. Got your name up there, got lights. It's unbelievable. You know, got people serving lemonades and fresh watermelon and everything else.
Fresh watermelon and lemonade.
Well, what I'm saying is I don't think much from him being at Vandy to Penn State would change him personally. If he's that open of a guy, and he loves having people around. I don't see why he wouldn't at Penn State.
I think he loved having the program talked about, and that was the only way he could have the program talked about.
True.
I bet they're not open there. I'm going to go out on a limb and say that they're not open there. Let's get a break, and we'll come back with a sports report with T-Mac next, right here at 730-1039 AM.
Are you ready, Alabama? It's time to enter the doghouse.
All right, what's going on in the last hour in the world of sports? You never know when something new has happened. That's why we've brought back the Doghouse Sports Report, which is being so aptly handled by one Antonio McBeth. Here is your Doghouse Sports Report.
The Atlanta Braves fell to the Dodgers last night 7-4, but not all was bad news. Right fielder Nick Markakis becomes the 10th active player to record his 2,000th hit. It came in the bottom of the fourth inning on a single to left field off of LA's pitcher Alex Wood. And Ozzie Albies got his first major league hit in the form of a three-run blast in the bottom of the ninth inning. The 20-year-old second baseman becomes the first player born in 1997 to have a major league home run. Alabama lands commitment from four-star Cameron Latu. The defensive end is from Salt Lake City, Utah, and is the Tide's second commit in as many days. Other college football news includes Mississippi State freshman running back Kylan Hill being arrested for reckless driving, the Starkville Daily News reported. According to head coach Dan Mullen, Hill will likely pay a fine and will not miss any playing time. The Dallas Cowboys beat the Arizona Cardinals 20-18 in the preseason opener last night in Canton, Ohio. The Cowboys held off a last-minute drive by the Cardinals after coming back from a two-touchdown deficit.
Because they were in a lock of the year!
And other NFL news includes Steelers and head coach Mike Tomlin agreeing to an extension through 2020, and Cowboys owner Jerry Jones states that he does not anticipate a suspension for Ezekiel Elliott. And finally, afternoon baseball, the Nationals beat the Cubs at Wrigley Field 4-2. I'm Tony Mack, and that is your Doghouse Sports Report.
That's it?
That's all I got.
That's all you got? You got nothing else?
I've unloaded it, big dog. I got nothing left.
Unloaded the clip? That's it?
That's it. You got something else for me?
Dateline, Hackensack, New Jersey.
Uh-oh.
A home intruder made himself comfortable inside a New Jersey residence yesterday morning, stripping off his clothes and trying to get in the shower with someone before being chased out of the bedroom. He then headed to the kitchen and started cleaning dirty dishes in the sink. James King of Jamaica, Queens, was charged with burglary and lewdness for the 9 a.m. invasion of a home in Hackensack, New Jersey. 16-year-old Minka Diaz, her 21-year-old sister, and her sister's baby were home alone when King came busting in the house through an unlocked door. Diaz was watching her nephew while her sister was showering, when her sister came running for the bathroom saying that there was a man in the house. Quote, she runs into the room with only her towel on, and she's on the phone with the police, Diaz told the outlet. The man proceeded to go to the kitchen and wash the dishes.
Can't throw
naked.
No way.
Naked, yeah.
Can't
he was naked, but he did do the dishes.
You're going to charge a man for trying to keep a clean kitchen?
Yeah. Yeah, he just started getting naked. Couldn't get in the shower. Already had someone in there, so he went down and did the dishes.
Some people like it when people do things in the kitchen naked. You know what I mean?
That's true.
That's not one of them, I guess.
Yes, there was no spatula involved. Old reference from the movie Stripes.
I have seen Stripes.
There you go. You've seen Stripes. You haven't seen A Bronx Tale. You've seen Stripes.
I never Goodness said it was gracious. A perfect childhood. But it was a childhood.
Fab Five is coming up next. We'll reset, and we'll get the phone lines open. Last run through the Big Ten. Future Factors right here on 730-1039. The Ump.